Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Every week here, leading up to the November elections, we're getting an update on the primary season and the goings-on politically with Mark and Molly Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and the Federalist. They join us on this Wednesday afternoon, April the 20th, for our weekly update on the November elections. Mark Hemingway is a regular guest, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Glad to be back.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor at the Federalist. Molly, welcome back to you.
Great to be here with you.
Mark, just run down what happened last night with the New York State primary there.
On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton got just under 58% of the vote in the New York primary, and Sanders got around 42%. The way the race stands on the Democratic side right now, Hillary Clinton has 1,930 delegates. Sanders has 1,189 delegates, and you need 2,383 delegates to clinch the nomination. There are 1,600 delegates in the Democratic primary still available. So even if Hillary drastically underperformed for the rest of the race, the odds of her clinching the nomination outright are pretty high. At the same time, Sanders isn't giving up and is sending out missives about how there's still a chance. And, you know, mathematically, he's correct. I mean, if he did extraordinarily, unprecedentedly well, he could pull off a clear nomination win, but probably not going to happen. And on the Republican side, it was a great night for Donald Trump. I think the optimistic case was that Trump was going to only get about 55 or something percent of the vote in the New York primary. He got just over 60, things are starting to get really interesting in the Republican race. Donald Trump outperformed even for what people thought would be a good performance in New York. He got something like 90 of the 95 delegates that were up for grabs in New York. And that means that if you go to 538.com, which is one of the premier election watcher sites, and you look at how they've done the polling analysis for the remaining states that have yet to vote, at the current rate, Trump is going to finish with 1,191 delegates. He needs 1,237 to clinch the Republican nomination, and there are a number of uncommitted delegates, especially from Pennsylvania, which is yet to vote, that could easily go over to Trump's side and clinch him the nomination outright. He's got to do well still in both Indiana and California, two upcoming primaries, before we can start talking about him clinching the nomination outright just yet.
I got a couple of questions for both of you on the Democratic side. First of all, Molly, I read, and I think it was an op-ed piece in the New York Times this morning that said, kind of heralding that Hillary had won very handily there, and that because, I think the reasoning was this, and I want to know what you think of it, because New York State is such a populous state, it represents kind of the broad demographic of the rest of the United States, and that shows that Hillary's likely to do well with the average voter nationwide. What do you think of the reasoning of the New York Times there?
Yeah, I think it's hilarious, actually, and such a typically New Yorker thing to say that New York is representative of the rest of the country. God bless New Yorkers, but sometimes they have a very myopic view of the country, and they seem to think they're at the center of it. Having said that, there is also an argument that New York does have a mixture of city versus more rural areas. It has racial diversity that would make it similar to many other states. So it's not completely crazy. But the thing is, Hillary Clinton was the senator from New York. If she were to have lost that state, that would have been very bad. The fact that she is the very recent senator and only got 58% of the vote. She had only one opponent to beat, and she somehow performed less well than Donald Trump. That is not a great sign of how her appeal to the rest of the country. It's, in fact, the opposite.
Mark, on Sanders' question, Sanders is Jewish. How do you explain Clinton winning the Jewish vote in New York State?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. Sanders has had problems lately because his Jewish advisor on his campaign was decidedly anti-Jewish in a lot of ways, and she was mixed up, I think, with some of the boycott activists of Israel and things like that, and she was viewed as being sort of very hostile to Israel. So to the extent that there is a large number of Jews in New York City in particular, they tend to be, you know, in favor of Zionism, and that is definitely not where Bernie Sanders is coming from. So I think that hurt him a bit with Jews.
On the Republican side there, Molly, I'm wondering about Ted Cruz. Can you explain Ted Cruz, number three in New York State?
Well, I think that the problem for Ted Cruz in New York, well, there were many problems, but one of the main problems would be that all of the anti-Trump vote was split between him and Kasich. And if only one of them had been in the race, then they actually would have pulled more of the delegates away from Trump in some of these congressional districts. But his appeal is not New York, and it certainly hurt him in New York City when he went after New York values, something that I would actually defend in general. His whole point was that Donald Trump appeals to New Yorkers and has New York values, but those values aren't shared by the rest of the country. That's true, but that's not the kind of thing that's going to help you in New York State, and I think that was played up to good effect by opponents of Cruz. But, you know, Kasich is really to blame for the poor performance of the efforts of those who oppose Trump as the nominee.
What's he doing still in the race? Other than coming in second in New York, what's he doing?
Hey, well, came in second, but didn't help him at all. He has very few delegates. I think he really truly believes that he will somehow. I can't explain. I would like to answer that question, and I don't know. I have to think at some point that a lot of people who go into politics are narcissistic, and I think he just really believes he can have a shot at the convention by just hanging in there till the end. Maybe Mark has a better idea.
Mark?
Well, I mean, if it is going to be a broker convention, and again, the possibility of that is, you know, very high, then certainly Kasich could possibly, you know, cut a deal to, you know, put somebody over the top with his number of delegates and then worm his way onto a presidential ticket, maybe as a vice presidential candidate. You know, maybe he is, you know, narcissistic enough to believe that if the convention was truly crazy and there were multiple ballots, then somehow he could end up being the consensus pick for the nomination outright. You know, I don't know. At this point in time, as I pointed out, we're on a knife's edge here in terms of Trump actually winning the delegates outright or getting close enough that he can steal enough uncommitted delegates to put himself over the top of the convention. So if anything, we're perilously close to Trump being the nominee, and Kasich may, in fact, be enabling Trump's ability to win the nomination outright rather than be a contender at the convention.
I mean, you could say, though, that he's right in that just simply by still existing in the race by the time of the convention, crazier things have happened than to have the guy with, you know, some guy that's third or fourth in the delegate count from getting the nomination out of the convention. We like to think that whoever has the most votes is going to win the nomination, that there's plenty of precedent for that not happening. And in that case, he might be a good consensus candidate, I suppose.
Molly, coming back to Senator Cruz's statement about New York City values, his original statement is about New York City, that New York City is basically socially liberal. Has the media made it clear that he was talking about New York City and not about New York State?
Not at all. And in fact, most of the media are headquartered in New York City, and they're so provincial, and they think that, like I said, they think they're the center of the universe. They took such offense and pretended not to understand what he was talking about. And it was actually really offensive to sort of see how they willfully misconstrued what he was saying. I do think that the average American completely understood what he was saying. The message might have been a little more difficult to convey in New York. But, you know, upstate New Yorkers are not very fond of New York City themselves, and they feel like New York City has this outsized influence on the state legislature just, you know, by that's how it works when their population is headquartered down there. And they are, they also share that sort of disdain for the values that New York City represents. But Donald Trump really does represent those values well, and he did get that population. He got a lot of the state, and he also does well with rural voters, and so it was a good combination for him, his home state, that he won.
Mark Cruz said that New York City's socially liberal, pro-abortion, pro-gay marriage. Was he wrong?
I mean, if you look at how the city votes overall in terms of that, it votes overwhelmingly Democratic. I mean, yes. I don't see any what the real controversy there would be.
What are your thoughts, Molly? I mean, this is something that probably is only going to hurt him in New York, or is it something that's going to hurt him in the East Coast in general?
Oh, I don't think so. I think a little bit of interstate rivalry is a good thing, and that I really truly believe that average Americans understood what he was saying in a way that the media pretended not to understand what he was saying. There's no question. I mean, Woody Allen has made how many films mocking the stereotype of New Yorkers as being out-of-touch elite liberals, and he embraces that. I mean, most New Yorkers embrace the idea that they are these hyper-progressives on all these issues. And, you know, the New York Times editor, I remember, once said that they try and play it straight on everything but social issues, and then they shade they lean to one side on social issues. I mean, it's kind of an open acknowledgement that that's how New York City is. It's obvious to everyone. And apart from the media wanting to have something to obsess over for a while, I don't think it mattered that much, but it did matter in New York.
Is there a favorite Bible verse or Bible story that has informed your thinking or your character through life, sir?
Well, I think many. I mean, you know, when we get into the Bible, I think many, so many. And tell people about an eye for an eye, you can almost say that. That's not a particularly nice thing. But, you know, if you look at what's happening to our country, I mean, when you see what's going on with our country, how people are taking advantage of us and how they scoff at us and laugh at us and they laugh at our face, and they're taking our jobs, they're taking our money, they're taking our you know, they're taking the health of our country. And we have to be very firm, and we have to be very strong, and we can learn a lot from the Bible, that I can tell you.
Molly, that, of course, is Donald Trump from an interview on WHAM Radio in Rochester, New York. You wrote about this recently, his stated most influential Bible verse, an eye for an eye.
Yes, you know, I'm always intrigued by Donald Trump's comments on religion. He identifies as a Presbyterian. He says he goes to church at least on Christmas and Easter. He says that he doesn't ask for forgiveness because he just prefers to never need to ask for forgiveness. He says he behaves in such a way as to not need to ask for forgiveness. You can evaluate whether you think that's fair or not. And he has given different answers over the years about his favorite Bible verse. He'd made some reference. I can't remember what it was. He said it was in Proverbs, and it was about envy, but nobody knew what he was referring to. Nobody could cite the actual verse. He had said it was never bend to envy. I don't think that's in there, but I'm not sure what he was alluding to. And then we just heard his answer here for an eye for an eye. But one thing I thought was interesting, everybody had fun with it, of course. Of course he would say that this is his favorite verse, and people pointed out that this is the verse that Jesus contradicted, they said, or refuted when he talked, when he gave his Sermon on the Mount. And I wrote a piece saying that I don't think that's quite fair, and I think that everybody was showing a misunderstanding of that verse, which is first mentioned in Exodus and refers, it's sort of the context is Moses is sharing legislation, basically, about how Israel should govern itself, how the judges should make determination with the people. The idea wasn't to be mean or to be harmful, but in fact the opposite. It was about limiting your vengeance. So if someone does something bad to you, you're only allowed to respond up to the point of proportionality. If someone kills, their life is taken. If they harm your arm, you harm their arm. And it, you know, it's an old system of justice, but something that we actually still use today, this idea of proportionality. It's repeated in Deuteronomy and Leviticus, and is further fleshed out as applying not just to the people of Israel, but also to foreigners. And it shows the importance of being a witness who is giving true testimony. It's really great. You know, it's a great verse. I don't think that Donald Trump interpreted it properly. But also, Jesus didn't refute it. Not at all. The whole pattern of Jesus is to say, you've heard it said this, or, you know, we know this. You know you're not supposed to commit adultery. Well, I say that even if you lust after a woman in your heart, you're breaking that commandment. He's not refuting the commandment against adultery. He's saying it goes so much further than you have imagined. So when he says, you've heard it said that, you've heard it said an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, but I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. He's not refuting the principle of limiting your vengeance. He's saying, take it as far as you can take it. And he lived his life this way, and he showed this up to the point of his crucifixion, when instead of seeking vengeance for the people who had wronged him, he asks God to forgive them.
Molly Hemingway is senior editor at The Federalist, along with her husband, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for The Weekly Standard. We're getting our weekly update on the November elections. When we come back, will social and religious conservatives vote for Donald Trump if he turns out to be the GOP nominee?
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. We're getting our update on the November elections on this Wednesday afternoon, April the 20th. Mark and Molly Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and The Federalist are our guests. Mark, picking up on something that we were talking about before the break with Molly, do you think that social and religious conservatives, are going to end up voting for Trump if he is the GOP nominee?
That's a really good question. And we talked about on this program before this notion that weekly churchgoers tend not to support Trump, whereas, you know, people who describe themselves as broadly evangelical seem more amenable to him. So, you know, it just depends a lot on, you know, who we're talking about when we talk about religious Americans in a lot of ways in terms of who's supporting Trump. At the same time, though, the big X factor here is it's not whether or not Donald Trump is necessarily, you know, a man of sincere faith or a person who has good morals. It's also a situation where we have to evaluate whether or not Donald Trump would do less harm as a result of whatever lack of morals he may have compared to Hillary Clinton, who has quite the track record of not exactly being an upstanding or moral or trustworthy person, is involved in numerous scandals and doesn't seem to have a tremendous amount of ethics herself. So that's really the big thing we have to figure out, you know, as we go into the general election, if Trump is the nominee. I mean, are people going to decide that he is really the lesser of evils here? That's something that I think a lot of religious people might, as much as it might pain them that these are their choices, that they may end up knuckling under and supporting Trump as a result. Or, you know, they may just stay at home, and in which case it's hard to say how that'll affect the election.
Molly, I read a piece in The Federalist from a former Trump supporter basically saying, I was wrong. I voted in anger is what he said. But then he did say what many people are saying, but nonetheless, I will vote for whoever the GOP nominates. How common do you think that thinking is among the average GOP voter? I don't like Trump, but if he's a nominee, I guess I'll vote for him.
I personally think, and I don't have evidence to back this up, that you'll see a lot of that. You will see people who vote voting for whomever the nominee is. So that's whether they are a current Trump voter who will end up voting for Cruz or a Cruz voter who will end up voting for Trump. Having said that, all of the official analysis shows that if Trump gets the nomination, it is an almost certain victory for Hillary Clinton. That's just official, everyone who's polling and looking at that issue in head-to-head matchups. All sorts of states that Republicans traditionally win, you know, like Tennessee and I think Alabama is one of them, would go to the Democratic side. And there wouldn't be new states opening up because of Trump. We were just talking about New York. Donald Trump would not win New York. Hillary Clinton would win New York. It's not even close. And so you wouldn't see that this new kind of candidate would necessarily open up new opportunities for Republicans, but you're seeing all sorts of congressional districts and states begin to be leaning more Democrat or going more Democrat if Trump is the nominee. Now, it's, of course, very hard to predict the future, and nobody has done a particularly good job predicting the future this time around. But I think it's just important to note that this is what people who study this for a living say. It's like an overwhelming phenomenon that people will not be voting for Donald Trump, that he loses traditional Republican voters in a way that no other candidate does, and that he does not bring in enough new voters.
Molly, the House Select Committee hearings on the pricing of fetal tissue began this morning. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so this was the second in a series of hearings that a committee investigating the practice of human organ trafficking from aborted babies. They're just investigating different aspects of that business. This is something that did arise when new information broke out last year that there were all these sales of human organ parts happening at Planned Parenthood and other clinics. Planned Parenthood has since said that they have stopped selling body parts, which is a pretty good admission that they were selling body parts. They're no longer taking money. And this hearing was just fascinating, I thought. It had a bevy of expert witnesses who were talking about whether based on the evidence that has been provided thus far, publicly available evidence or evidence that has been found from just what investigations have been done thus far, whether there's enough information to go on to basically pursue this issue further. So they had included in this screenshots from websites where there's a drop-down menu where you can order, like, a human tongue from an unborn child or even ovaries from an unborn child of only 15 weeks gestation. I mean, just a huge drop-down menu showing different body parts, not just tongue and ovaries, but brains, scalps, for unborn children. So there's definitely a market in play, and I think that was shown beyond a shadow of a doubt. And to find out whether people are following the law, which basically prohibits profiting from unborn children body parts, would require much more investigation. But just the fact that all this is publicly available speaks quite... I mean, it basically vindicated all of those videos that David DeLeiden had put out in the Center for Medical Progress, showing that there is a huge market, there is a huge markup on body part sales, and that the costs are incurred by the procurement companies that sell the parts to other to researchers and whatnot, and costs are not incurred by abortion clinics, so they shouldn't be taking money for those body parts. Just a ton of very interesting information. And also interesting was that the Democrats on the committee fought tooth and nail to keep the evidence from being released, which I think speaks to how scared they are about the quality of the evidence. In fact, we're filibustering right at the beginning of the hearing, trying to keep the evidence from even being discussed at the hearing, and the whole purpose of the hearing was to discuss the evidence. And they repeatedly tried to keep information from being publicly discussed, and it was, to me, that was actually the most interesting part of the hearing, was how hard Democrats fought to keep evidence from being discussed and to say that no discussion should go forward in the future about the practice of human organ sales from aborted children.
Folks, you can read Mark and Molly Hemingway's columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly Hemingway is senior editor at The Federalist. Molly, thank you.
Thank you.
And Mark Hemingway is senior writer for The Weekly Standard. Mark, thanks.
Thanks again.
The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for April, is a story, The Executioner's Redemption. It's a true story. It's tragically true, the story of a former death row guard and in the Texas State Penitentiary System, who's now a Lutheran pastor, and his journey really from that life of extreme violence and daily acquainted with the issue of justice and death to the Christian pulpit. You can find out more about The Executioner's Redemption, My Story of Violence, Death, and Saving Grace at our website, issuesetc.org. It's on every page of the website. Or call Concordia Publishing House and order The Executioner's Redemption, The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for April. 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we'll talk about Jesus' descent into hell with Dr. Curtis Giese. That's right after this break.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.